Welcome to the sixth episode in the Lessons from Award-Winning Publisher podcast series from Media Voices. I'm Peter Houston, and I'm learning all I can about making successful podcasts from the winners of this year's Publisher Podcast Awards. We're now accepting entries for our 2021 awards. I'll tell you where you can get more information about entering your podcasts at the end of this episode. But first, I'm talking with Jeff Jean, producer of the Spin Cricket podcast from The Guardian, the winner of our 2020 sports category. The Spin ran for about 25 episodes last year through an incredibly busy cricket season that included the Ashes series and the Cricket World Cup. Jeff is a freelance audio producer. He started out in radio production, but over the last few years has found more of his work coming from podcasts. With the professional credentials for the job and as a self-confessed cricket tragic, Jeff saw The Spin as a perfect gig. I asked him what it was like launching the podcast with The Guardian.
The Guardian have quite a well-structured approach to multimedia production. You know, they have a multimedia department sat within The Guardian. Audio is one facet of that. And I think they do audio particularly well. They already have in Football Weekly, one of the UK's most popular podcasts. And the team who make that are audio specialists, and I think they were looking to replicate that model with the cricket, to bring in somebody who had cricket knowledge and could run the editorial side of it, but also to bring in somebody with specialist audio knowledge who could create a format and actually, you know, ultimately create a podcast that sounds great. The other half of the project, my sort of partner for the summer, was Emma John, who presented the podcast, is a cricket journalist at The Guardian in her own right. Has worked on Observer Sport Monthly in the past, written a Wisden Cricket Book of the Year. So, I was in good company for that. And the first two or three meetings, we sat with the head of the audio division, Catherine Godfrey. And then after that, we were relatively left to our own devices when it was seen that, you know, we were going to work well together. We both knew cricket. I think at that point had convinced Catherine I knew what I was doing, and they sort of left us alone to devise the format and run some pilots at that stage.
So, left to their own devices, how did Emma and Jeff settle on the Spin's final format?
It was quite a tight turnaround. I think we had 3 weeks from my hiring to the first episode. And in that time, we recorded two non-broadcast pilots. The first was very much throwing some content at the wall and seeing what sounded good. The second one was a full pilot, which listening back to it is quite different from what the show became, but you can see the genesis of some of the ideas. But we knew what existed in the market already. I guess we knew what we didn't want to be from day one. But at the same time, you know, we are representing The Guardian. So there was an element of this must contain some good journalism. We should look to use the resources that we have available to us in terms of personnel. And, you know, in the likes of someone like Vic Marks at The Guardian, you've got someone who is a very well-respected journalist and broadcaster. You'd have to be mad not to have Vic as part of your plans for that podcast. We knew we wanted a funny comedy element to it, and we put the pledge out early that we would have a cricket-loving comedian on every show. And then we wanted to tap into people who loved cricket that perhaps you didn't realize they did. So we would look at someone like Camilla Shamsie, the author, who grew up in Pakistan, is a huge cricket fan, and could talk about it from a really personal level of, you know, watching with her father and how she got into cricket, but also, you know, a detailed knowledge of cricket that she could bring to the table.
It sounded like guests were a big part of the plan, but with all the Guardian expertise at hand, why focus on guests?
I think there are some brilliant cricket podcasts around at the moment that are, you know, the same two people, and they're well researched, and they have a narrative story arc over multiple episodes. and that's fine if that's what you're looking to do. We set out that this would be a much more collaborative affair. There was also the issue that last year was a massive cricket summer. So we had the World Cup and we had an Ashes. And in the World Cup, you've got multiple countries being represented. And we wanted our studio guests to cover that as well. So, you know, we would have an Indian cricket journalist in this week and an Australian comedian in next week to reflect the multinational fair that was on offer in the cricket. I still have possibly the world's most complicated spreadsheet. You know, we were looking at four guests per show, two shows a week for an entire summer. So a lot of my time was spent guest booking and juggling those guests. We wanted to have a comedian on every show. We wanted to have a representative of the country that England were playing on each show. We wanted to have a Guardian journalist on each show. So getting that balance right was a bit of a work of art. And then, as you say, you've got those opportunities for the more ad hoc guests. And we would always throw those in where we could. We spoke to a woman who it was on the occasion, I'm pretty sure it was her 100th birthday. But she toured with England in the 20s and 30s, who had fascinating stories. And, you know, we got the opportunity to speak to her. And of course, you don't turn that down.
With tight turnarounds, an agenda driven by sporting events, and that level of guest scheduling, I wondered if bringing in a producer was the only way to go for the spin.
I guess to some extent, I would say that, wouldn't I? But actually, what we had on that show was the double act of a cricket journalist and an actual producer with a love of cricket, and so all bases were covered. And I think that's really important when you are putting together a podcast, that you do cover all the bases. You know, I wouldn't necessarily go into a project like this without someone who had the editorial clout to cover the Guardian's journalistic integrity. I wouldn't deign to do that on my own. And I think it would be a mistake if the Guardian just plucked a journalist and said, okay, you're making this podcast. I know you don't know how, but it'll be fine. You'll get away with it. There was a cricket magazine who put a podcast out about a decade ago. And I remember emailing them at the time and saying, look, I am a cricket fan and a radio professional, and you're not that far from me. And I'm happy to just come and give you a hand, because you're making so many mistakes, even if they're just, you know, real nuts and bolts audio mistakes. You know, you're off mic, or you're using the wrong mic, or, you know, I can hear your headphones feeding back, or whatever it is. But, you know, sometimes they are just technical failings of somebody who hasn't got experience of making a production. And sometimes they're just sort of editorial or format mistakes, where you just go, this is okay, your content's okay, but if you just formatted it, then you might actually have a product here. You know, just listening to 30 minutes of two people talking isn't necessarily interesting.
So as an audio pro, can Jeff spot when there's not a producer involved?
It does, where it's obvious that they've decided this is easy, we'll do it on our own. And I guess to an extent, I usually feel, well, you know, you had the option and you chose not to, and this is where you end up. 15 years ago or so, when we sort of first started getting Facebook or Twitter into radio stations, that this is fine, let's just get the producer to, you know, tweet something, that'll be okay. You know, you fast forward a little bit and everybody's realized that actually, if you want to do social media well, let's get a social media producer in and embed them in the teams and do it properly. So there's not really a hell of a difference between that and publishers getting in a radio producer and embedding them in their team to produce their podcasts.
Getting back to the spin and that incredibly busy cricket season, what was the production schedule like for the podcast?
On a typical record day for the spin, we would record usually about 10 in the morning. It was dependent usually on when England had played that day. So a normal day, we'd record at 10, finish at midday. I would then start the edit, which is usually a 4 or 5 hour edit, and then you'd go into the sort of sign off and building the web pages. So you'd sort of start 8 o'clock and finish around about 8 o'clock. They were quite a long day. The difficult ones would come if England played a day game. We would record about 6 in the evening, so you might not get into the edit until 9 at night, and I was quite often the only person in the Guardian leaving at 3 in the morning. There's a lot fewer people overnight in a newspaper than I thought there would be.
I think there's a lot fewer people in a newspaper office these days, full stop. But a 5 or 6 hour podcast edit, that's a lot of work.
To me, the edit is where the show comes to life. You know, we would record an hour and a half, and I'm really crafting the best 40 minutes out of that. I think it's even more important where you are working with someone who isn't a sort of seasoned presenter or broadcaster, because you are to some extent making them sound like a seasoned broadcaster in the edit. You know, I think quite early on, and Emma and I still joke about this, I think we realized that what we were never going to get was a really tightly recorded 40 minutes that didn't require much editing. That just wasn't the way this show was going to happen. So it does happen in the edit. And, you know, that is true of any podcast that I make or produce. Probably 50% of the creative process is the actual edit itself.
But a lot of publishers try to avoid editing, or at least to minimise it. Why is it so essential for Jeff?
To some extent, I would compare it to, you know, the first draft of a novel is not the one you read. It then starts a lengthy process of editorial revisions and rewrites. And the same is true of a podcast. You know, what you've actually put down on tape in that recording isn't necessarily what people are going to hear. And I'd suggest most of the time, if that is what people are hearing, you've completely missed a stage out of the production process. And it's funny because you don't get that in other mediums. You know, even a live radio program, a lot of those interviews will be pre-recorded and edited, because you wouldn't want a sort of long, rambly 20-minute conversation going to air. So, yeah, it's an essential part of the production process.
So do people take the podcast production process too lightly?
It takes up more resources than you think it does. You know, like any good product, you see the tip of the iceberg and don't necessarily appreciate how much work went into that. Don't underestimate how much resources it takes.
So as a seasoned audio producer, what are Jeff's tips for getting your podcast right?
I would definitely pilot. It's a stage that I think is missed out on. I've heard quite a few first episodes going to air. And I think if you asked anybody who's published a podcast what they think of their first episode, almost to a person, they would say, oh, it's shocking, it's changed so much. So 100% pilot, and don't plan to broadcast the first 2 or 3.
With all these mistakes being made, should publishers that want a successful podcast just hire a podcast producer?
I won't sit here and pretend that producing a podcast is rocket science, but there are people who know what they're doing, and they can advise you on a technical level, on a logistical level, on an editorial level. And I know cases where it's worked perfectly to just get someone in for a few weeks, build a format, help you build a makeshift studio somewhere, advise you on what equipment to buy. And it doesn't have to be a long-term commitment to somebody, but certainly in those initial planning stages, go and speak to somebody who does it professionally. And I think that's probably the advice you would follow on any other aspect of your business.
Talking to Jeff certainly put a different spin, pun intended, on publisher podcast production. As a veteran audio producer, he focused very much on planning and process. My key takeaways are: you'd be mad not to use the expertise you have in your organisation as part of your podcast's unique value proposition. Guests bring different and varying perspectives, But the more guests you have, the more time you're going to spend with your planning spreadsheet. Cover all the bases when you're putting together your podcast. Both editorial and production matter. Editing is an essential part of the podcasting process. Don't underestimate how much time it takes. First episodes are invariably terrible, so pilot your podcast and don't plan to broadcast your pilot episodes. Podcasting is not rocket science, but expert advice can help you build out infrastructure and fix formats quickly. You probably look for professional input anywhere else in your business, so why not podcasting? Huge thanks to Jeff Jean for taking the time to speak with me and sharing his expert insights into publisher podcasting. Next time, I'll be talking to Benjamin Thompson, host of the Nature podcast, winners of the science and medical category in our 2020 awards. Entries for the 2021 Publisher Podcast Awards are now open. And for more information on this year's expanded category lineup, take a look at publisherpodcastawards.com.